Welcome to the Andy Derer Show. This is episode 31. This week my guest is Aaron Burkhart, drummer of Screaming Sons Of, and also the first Nirvana drummer. We take a look inside of the Seattle sound of the late 80s, and we see just how much it's changed since then. Thanks again for listening. Thank you so much for tuning into the Andy Derer Show. This is episode 31, and today my guest via phone is Aaron Burkhart. How you doing, Aaron?
Good. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing great. Yeah, this is the original, the first drummer for Nirvana, and he's also in the band Screaming Sons Of currently. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
Awesome.
And also I'm on one track from Nerd Table that's going to be coming out in a couple months.
Oh, really cool. Yeah, I've been checking out the demos of Screaming Sons Of, and it's definitely that raw sound that definitely brings back, you know, the whole Seattle sound a little bit while getting even heavier, it seems. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah, I've always been heavy, you know. I like to play heavy shit.
Yeah, you can't get that out of your blood, right?
Nope. Yes, you can.
So I heard you just had your birthday, and my birthday was actually last week as well. It's I guess we're both Scorpios here. How was the festivities?
Oh, good. I went to a show up in Seattle at the Highline, and Chad was there. It was kind of good to hang out with him. And my buddy Dave Foster, who also was in Nirvana, his band played, Mico Donace. And yeah, it was a pretty good show. Got hammered.
Cool. Yeah. Why not? It's your birthday. And Yeah, so you're still playing the drums in these bands, and are you going to have any shows with Screaming Sons Of coming up? Or?
Yeah, we're playing December 17th at the Mix, which is in Georgetown, which is in like South Seattle, and then we're doing a New Year's Eve show, I think, down in Elma, kind of close to Aberdeen.
Oh, I got you. Cool. Yeah, and I actually just recently made a pilgrimage to Mecca, as I like to call it. I went to Aberdeen for the first time just to you know, go see the memorial under the bridge and reconnect with the whole scene. It's been almost 20 years since Nevermind, and I just had to do it for myself, you know.
Right on. Cool. Yeah, I kind of grew up in Aberdeen, but
You're used to it pretty much, right?
Yeah. I'm not far away from there now as it is. I'm in Olympia, so that's just 50 miles. So
cool. And I
can't get far enough away.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I heard you guys did a demo at Robert Lang's studio. He's the guy who produced like Def Leppard and stuff, right?
Oh yeah. He did the Foo Fighters. He did REM. He did Candlebox's albums. And he's a really cool guy. Plus, I guess that Nevermind or Nirvana did the You Know You're Right there.
Oh, I didn't even know. Huh. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and he also did the box set. He also did all the remastering, and the box set was done there also.
Oh, shit. Didn't even know that, huh? And he was married to Shania Twain, am I correct?
No. You're thinking of Mutt Lange.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's not the same Mutt Lange?
No. I thought the same thing too when I first met him, first heard him. Yeah, it's a whole different Lange thing.
That is funny because I believe it is Robert Mutt Lange. So I was totally not out of the bounds.
It's the same. Yeah, you're not too far. I thought the same thing, dude. I did. I swear to God, I thought the same thing.
That's awesome. How nice of a studio is it?
Oh, it's beautiful, man. It's like on the side of a hill, and it's just. It's like Spanish style. It's like five stories high. And it's just, he took us on a tour. It was just amazing, amazing recording studio. Plus house, you know, it's like, yeah, really nice.
He's living there. It's like a compound, huh?
Yeah. He's also building one down in Mexico, I think, another recording studio / house type thing down there. But yeah, really, really posh place. I like it.
Cool. Yeah, so you're living in Olympia now. What kind of stuff do you do for fun? Like, what clubs do you go to, or do you go to clubs?
I used to go hang out in Seattle. We've been playing a lot of shows up in Seattle. So, like, El Corazon and Tacoma Hell's Kitchen, I go to a lot of shows there. They got pretty cool shows there. But not many clubs here in Olympia now. You got the 4th Ave Cab, that's about it, and McCoy's. McCoy's is a cool rock place.
Cool, yeah. I'd like to take it back a little bit as far as your history. And so you grew up in Aberdeen, am I correct?
Yeah, I grew up back and forth from West Seattle to Aberdeen. I did all my junior high grade school, junior high, and high school years in West Seattle. And then I moved to Aberdeen when I was like 16, 17 years old.
Like, how was your family situation at the time? Were your parents together when you were, like, as a teenager? Oh, yeah.
No, I had it pretty much dysfunctional. I had a mom and a stepdad, and pretty much, I didn't want to get into that. That was not very much happy, joy when I was a kid, you know what I'm saying?
I got you. So did music help you out, like, help you get out of that, you know, those problems? Or?
Oh, yeah, because there's five of us in the family, five of us kids, and there's no way I could have a drum set. So it's like as soon as I got in seventh grade, I started taking drums and learned the bass and the snare drum, and I was in bands ever since then, you know. I don't know, I just had a gift. I thought maybe I knew how to play them, you know.
I got a good question. How about like an early drumming inspiration for you? Was it like John Bonham, or are we talking about more metal
dude,
stuff?
It was Neil Peart all the way, dude.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah, Neil Peart and John Bonham, but Neil Peart was up there, you know, so I'd always just loved his drumming.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody. I think that there needs to be a band that like captures that same weirdness that the band Rush had. You know, there's no band in 2011 that's really like, you know, a trio that really just are virtuosos on each instrument, you know?
Right, yeah. Total virtuosos on the instruments.
And they also capture that, you know, alienation type, you know, being a teenager and, you know, kind of hating your life and not knowing what's next.
Yep.
So, like, how about your first bands, or, what was your first band that you had?
The first band was I moved, which kind of ties in with the old Nirvana thing. I moved in to a friend of mine, Dana Bong, and, like, I was 19. It was, like, in 81, 82. I moved in with him and his girlfriend in this alley, and we started a band called Soon. It was, like, just S-O-O-N, Soon. But Dale Crover from the Melvins,
sure,
lived across the alley from me, right?
Oh, okay.
So, and this is a few years before Dale even joined the Melvins. He was in a band called Rampage, which was like a cover band. They played like high schools and fairs. So I became good friends with Dale, you know?
Sure.
And then when he joined the Melvins, oh my God, it was like, and I lived right across the alley, so I was at every freaking practice, you know what I'm saying? I couldn't get enough of the Melvins, but yeah.
Yeah, they were calling you Klingons, right? Or...
Yeah. Because usually every practice, I mean.
What kind of guy is Crover? Is he a nice guy to be around, or did it take a while for guys to be friends?
No, yeah, he's fun. He's funny. He's a cool guy. You know, and you see how big he is now with the Melvins, you know, because they're just like huge underground-wise, you know.
Oh, yeah, they're
enormous. Dale's my buddy.
That's awesome. So, yeah, being the Klingon, is that where you kind of, like, fell in line with Kurt? Was he at the same practices? Or?
Yeah, well, him and Chris used to come over and hang out sometimes at practice. And I don't know, it's one day, I was up there watching practice, and Kurt and Chris were there, and they asked me to join.
That's awesome.
Said, you want to be our drummer? And I was like, fuck yeah, right? So, I mean, and it was the very next, we went and got drums that same day. And that very same night, we were at Kurt's house, set up in his living room practicing.
That is so cool, huh? And they had already done like a tape as Fecal Matter? Or?
Yeah, but that was nothing, you know. I don't think Chris was on Fecal Matter. I'm pretty sure he wasn't. But but Kurt was already, you know, in the works, you know, writing music and shit, so...
Could you tell at the time that he was going to be a powerful songwriter, or was it just another dude that you're jamming with?
Hindsight's 20/20. You look back now, but he's just another dude that I was jamming with, you know? But Kurt had, I think he had a different kind of vision, different focus, you know? Because I was jamming with somebody, and I was, you know, I'd only been in bands for a couple years then. So, but yeah, you know, but we were in a small town, and it was all, we were in all the same clique, you know, all the musicians hung out together. And
sure.
So.
How about like the bridge thing? Is there any truth to that? He actually stayed the night under that Yonge Street bridge?
I don't know. He never, we used to go there and get stoned. That's where we go smoke weed, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
We called it drinking fish beer, and because we drink animal beer, you know, because it was cheap, right? And
sure.
Plus it was on the way to Chris's house. Because, Chris, you have to cross that bridge to go up Kicking the Hill.
Oh, okay.
right? So, and that's where Chris is. So we sometimes we just walk up to Chris's house, you know, three of us, and but we'd have to go over that bridge, and we'd stop at the bridge, and that was when it was all run down, and you know, and it was like a little bat trail to get down there. Now it's all open and the park and shit, so it's kind of weird.
That's funny. Yeah, it was the perfect memorial because, you know, I didn't want to go to like a stuffy old museum and see, you know, old pictures. This was like you've kind of felt his presence a little bit.
Sure.
You see all
yeah.
that fan art and stuff. And like I even found a hunting knife and I said, okay, that'll be my little souvenir. Put it in my pocket, you know. So.
Right on. Cool.
Yeah, which what a memorial should be. And yeah, so you guys would just, you know, hang out there, you know, be derelicts underneath the bridge.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Sounds like awesome times. And so,
Kurt never lived there. Kurt, his mom lived like a two blocks from the bridge. So
yeah, I got a picture of that house, and I was like, man, there's got to be something else because that house looks like every house in my neighborhood in Chicago, you know. So I was like,
yeah.
And that didn't quite like, you know, make my day. So I needed something a little bit more. So I'm glad I found the Young Street Bridge thing.
Cool.
But yeah, we did the same thing, you know, just hanging out, trying to waste the day away, you know. And so, what kind of like early demos were you guys fleshing out at these practices? Is it like a lot of the bleach material? Am I correct?
That and Incesticide, like the B side of Incesticide, like Anorexicist and Mexican Seafood and Nifty, you know, just the old songs.
Sure.
You know, Aero Zeppelin and Downer, Floyd the Barber, you know, then we're, you know, and I'll never forget, we did it like our first little demo cassette, and Kurt named it, this is a true story, dude. Kurt named it A is for Aaron, who fell down the stairs and shit his dress, right? And Kurt drew a picture, because he's always drawing, he drew a picture of some little stairs with a little stick girl in a dress falling down, right?
Sure.
And that was our demo. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
So cool.
And there's another story. We played, our first game was Skid Row. And
yeah.
We played live on the radio station in Olympia at Chaos. It was like, it's a radio station called Chaos, and it was a midnight show. Well, the very next day, and Kurt had been talking about changing our name from Skid Row because he found out about another band called Skid Row, right?
Yeah, Sebastian
Bach. The other metal band, right? So, and I swear to God, the very next day, I showed up to Kurt's to unload the gear because we hadn't unloaded from the night before, and he has drawn a picture. He had an easel, right?
Okay.
A big painting, and he drew a picture of of a freaking pen.
Sure.
With its cap all chewed up, right?
Yeah.
And that day, from that next day after that Chaos show, we were Pen Cap Chew.
Pen Cap
right?
Chew, that is so awesome.
So anyway,
yeah, we actually used to jam around when we were in, you know, junior high and stuff, and I had just read Come As You Are by Michael Azarad, and
we
did a show or two as Pen Cap Jew, and nobody else, you know, knew about the band, knew that we were plagiarizing Mr. Kurt, but yeah,
right.
People liked the name, though.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool book. That's, you know, out of all the books, you know, that I've read or seen, that's the only one that's really true.
Really?
You know, because Kurt was, that's the only one that was written when Kurt was alive.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Yeah.
And I wouldn't, and that Michael Azarad, he got so pissed off at me, dude. He's like, because I wouldn't sign a release forms for my
sure.
interview.
Okay.
And I told him, I want to get an okay from Kurt so that he okays my interview for some reason, you know what I'm saying? So that's the last time Kurt called me was in, it was November of 93, and he was telling me to sign them papers.
So,
I guess Mike Lazarad wouldn't leave him alone or something like that.
Gotcha. So Kurt gave you the go-ahead to do the interview, huh?
Yeah. 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 No, Mike Lazarad came to Aberdeen and interviewed me with the tape recorder and everything.
Sure.
Right? So I wanted Kurt to listen to my interview that he did and okay it, basically, yeah.
Gotcha. So you're being like a nice guy and just making sure it's all good
uh-huh.
for him. Huh.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how true the parts about you are in the book. Like, I heard you got in a couple, like, crazy accidents during your time with Nirvana.
Yeah. No, this is before I was in Nirvana.
Oh.
I got in a bad car wreck in 84 out on the highway leaving Aberdeen. And I hit that, going through Central Park there, and we hit the cement barrier. And it killed the driver, a good friend of mine. I was in the passenger seat, so, yeah. Plus, I also drove through the front of fucking, the shop right where Kurt used to live, where we used to practice, was behind
heard about
the shop
this,
right.
Yeah.
And we went to the front of a store. Like, I wasn't driving. I was passenger. And this chick hit the, I was with this chick, and she hit the gas instead of the brake, and drove right through the front of the grocery store. Right? I took out the whole video section, and, oh, yeah, it was crazy.
That is hilarious. Did you ever get, like, to see the police footage or like, the video footage, or was there any, like... No.
I took off. The chick's like, I get out of the car, and she's like, get back in. I was like, fuck that.
No way.
She took off, and yeah, and I kind of went around the building, and I got away. But they weren't after me because I wasn't driving.
Oh, I got you. They're just after her.
Yeah.
Did she get in a lot of trouble? Or?
Oh, yeah. It was like $25,000 worth of damage.
Oh, man.
They took out the whole front of the store.
That's crazy. So, like, what kind of guy was Chris Novoselic? Like, was he more of the Joker guy or, like the out loud guy?
Yeah. That's Chris. He had his van. I remember in high school he had this van, and he painted like a safari, you know, black and white stripes.
Sure.
But, Chris was always, he's a crazy one. He's fucking hilarious. Their whole family is. I'm good friends with his little brother Robert also. And then they're all tall. They're all tall. But yeah, Chris was the funny. He's the funny one out of a bunch, I tell you.
That's awesome. Do you guys ever correspond?
No. I saw him last September. No, just a couple months ago. I saw him at the Nevermind show. They had the EMP.
Oh, sure.
With the 20th anniversary thing.
Awesome.
But, you know, we don't correspond. I talk, say hi, and that's about it, you know. Give him a big hug, and that was, you know.
Like, how about this? Do you ever get together with the old – I know this kind of sounds corny, like a plot for a bad reality show, but do the old, drummers of Nirvana ever get together? You know, Chad Channing, Dave Foster, Dan Peters, you, and Crover?
Well, I talk to Dave a lot because Dave's – played drums for a band that I was in a few years ago. And that's who I went and saw the other night on my birthday.
Sure.
It was Nico, they're called Nico Donate. But Dave Foster played drums for them. And I don't know, I've met Dan and Dan Peters a couple times, but I'm good friends with Matt Lucan.
Lucan's
my buddy.
Cool.
Yeah, Matt, I've seen him the last few months. I've seen him a couple times. And because we do shows up in West Seattle, and he lives right by the venue where we play. So
he comes out.
Matt's a good guy.
Did you ever run into Dave Grohl?
No, I've never met Dave. Never met him.
Oh, he's not really the Seattle part. Seattle guy, right? Yeah.
No. But he did live up by Robert Lang Studios for a while.
Oh, yeah, you said they recorded there, huh?
Yeah, when Dave Grohl his first recordings of Foo Fighters was done at Robert Lang Studios.
Oh, that does ring a bell now. Yeah, the solo or the self-titled album.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's cool.
The first one we did where you know, they did all the instruments. And
yeah, that's the best one for me. I don't know about anybody else. But.
Oh, yeah, with the Futos or the Mentos with the Futos. And
yeah, that was hilarious. How about this? I saw you post that... like, a lot of the ideas for the drumming of Bleach were up to you, kind of. Like, it was all, like, the Next Generation.
Yeah.
And then, like, the Nevermind album was a lot of Chad Channing's to do as far as drumming. And then In Utero was when Grohl finally put his mark on it.
Right. Yeah, that's the way I look at it, you know. And it is true, I mean, because I don't know. There's a lot of songs, like I said, a lot of Bleach and a lot of the whole B-side of Incesticide with me. But I was in the band when those songs were written. But I know it's just, you know,
sure.
I didn't record it, so I kind of got robbed. But I, you know, the same thing happened to Chad with Nevermind.
With Nevermind, of course, yeah.
Because yeah. Chad was like, for instance, In Bloom, that's Chad. So there's a lot of songs that I don't know how that works with, you know, drummers are just fucking drummers. But this new recording that I'm not coming out on, it's Nerd Table.
Okay.
And I'm doing it was basically done online, the recording. Well, I went in Chad's studio, and he recorded my drums. But it's got Dale Crover. It's cool because we're doing Floyd the Barber, and Dale Crover's singing the chorus, and I'm playing the drums.
I heard this. It's so awesome, by the way. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, that's so you guys are, I heard about this, and so you guys are doing this just as a one-off single, or is it going to be for some sort of compilation, or?
I think it might be on a compilation also, but right now it's going to be on Nerd Table's next album, which it's supposed to be out in March. called Chasing the Bronco.
And is that Dale Crover's band or?
No. They're called Nerd Table, but they're also friends with Toshi, who does a lot of the Melvins, and he does a lot of Deaf Nephews, which is Dale's other band, Deaf Nephews, and he just produces a lot of music, and they're just friends. And the artwork for Chasing the Bronco, this is a really weird picture of a monster. That was done by Chris Kirkwood from Meat Puppet. So yeah, but at Nerd Table, Alvin's got all the special. Ron Jeremy's on it. Dave Foster's on it, and yeah, it's hilarious.
Sounds like a really interesting thing. I'll have to definitely check that out. You're saying next year coming out?
March. Okay. I got an advance copy already, and it's just a killer album.
It's supposed to be out
in March.
Yeah, bring up the Meat Puppets. I just actually caught them at the Double Door in Chicago last week, and man, these guys still throw down a crazy show. I mean, the guy's about 50 years old, and he's just blowing minds. I mean, they played all their songs just really electrified and louder than they are on the studio. So it was a crazy show.
Right on.
And they're actually, they okayed an interview, so I might be doing an interview with them in December. Cross your fingers, but.
Right on. Yeah, I love Meat Puppets.
Yeah, were they as big as an inspiration on you guys starting out, or was that something that Kurt had in
Kurt,
his pocket?
Kurt loved the Meat Puppets back when I was in the band. Yeah, I remember he had little flyers on his wall, Meat Puppets. Yeah, he liked the Meat Puppets forever.
Yeah, the Meat Puppets 2 album is classic, but I just got into some of the other albums that people don't even talk about around that time, you know, 87, like Huevos and Mirage, right. And they're pretty crazy because they kind of put away the country and they actually use a little bit of drum machines and stuff like that, so it's just a really weird-sounding Meat Puppets album, you know?
Right.
So what kind of music are you into lately of like the newer generation?
The newer generation? I don't know. I'm old school. Like I love Metallica and Exodus, and I've always been a metalhead. You know, I like all types of music, basically.
Yeah, is it true that the metal is kind of like lame nowadays with this new metal? I kind of can't even listen to a lot of new metal.
Right. I went and saw Korn. I always liked Korn, and they kind of disappointed me. And I don't know. It's just.
They aged quickly. Like they were so vital when their first couple albums, you know, totally different sound. And now it seems like they fired a lot of guys, and now it's just that singer and maybe one of the other guys. I don't know. It seems like they're kind of faking the metal now.
Yeah, dude, because they were jamming on stage. I saw them at the White River this summer, and they had a hidden guitar player. Right, it's like he's out behind the drummer. You know, you can see him jamming, but he's kind of hidden. And he's getting down, right? But he's not in the band Korn, it's like cooking, you know.
No, they
it's kind of lip syncing with the I don't know, it's just kind of weird.
I always think it's lame when a band will bring out that other guitarist and put him like behind a curtain or something, like Green Day does that.
That's what Korn is doing. But I've been listening to like Brothers of the Sonic Cloth, right? That's Chad's new band. And then I just went and saw Vaporland, which is Kurt Danielson, members of Kurt Danielson and Love Battery and Fluid, right? And which Kurt was from Chad also.
Sure.
And then, I went and saw, there's a band like Lozen. I go to a lot of punk rock shows. Band Lozen and see who else I want to listen to.
That's awesome. So like the Seattle scene is still going. It's just, it's just finding itself in different bands, like newer incarnations of old guys that have been around.
Exactly, dude. And then Malfunction's back, right? Malfunction, which is Kevin Woods.
Andy yeah, obviously Woods, without Andy Kevin. Wood, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of them, like you said, incarnation of bands. But there's a lot of killer shows. I mean, every other day, every week there's a killer show on the channel.
I just rediscovered that Malfunction. Like, I just found the album at a used CD store, and it's really, really damn good. And, Jack Endino produced it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Jack Endino, he plays in the Bitch Queen, or he's kind of a guest guitar player.
Sure.
In the Bitch Queens, and they played last night here in Seattle at Paramount. Huh. But,
Yeah, so it's like, it's just reincarnating itself into different groups, and that's awesome. How about the guys from Soundgarden? Do you ever see them around?
I met Kim just last April, but he goes to a lot of like Cat or Brothers of the Sonic Cloth shows and Miko Dinacci shows, and But yeah, they hang out in clubs. You'll see him every once in a while. You go to a show, you'll see Kim, right, hanging out.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of strange. Like the other night, I went to the show, Dave Foster's band, Nico DiNaccia, and Cab was there. Oh, they're right on. So I'm kind of
awesome.
Yeah.
Is he still as huge as he's always been?
No, he's lost a lot of weight, dude.
Really? Huh.
He has. His wife Peg, they call her Peg of Death.
Okay.
She's cool. I think she like cracked a whip and.
I got you.
But I was all drunk and I was hanging at Chad's table, right, the other night, and I'm like, Chad, I got $1 million winner. We're gonna, because they're called Brothers of the Sonic Cloth.
Okay. Sure.
New band. I said, we're gonna regroup this cat again. We get you out there, you know, because I can imagine if he went and toured as Cat, you know, he'd probably get a hell of a more response. I don't know if he kind of took
yeah.
that as a.
I,
you know
I think
what
if,
I mean?
If he went with the Tad name, I think he'd draw more tickets. So
you bet.
Sales. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I'm, like it's weird about the Seattle scene. How about Pearl Jam? Were they? Actually truly part of the scene, or was it more of just a little bit of acting job?
Yeah. No, I did a show. See, Pearl Jam was Green River, then Mother Love Bone, then Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Basically. And I like the malfunction thing. When we were called up, I think we were Ted Ed Fred. It might have been Skid Row. But we did a show with Malfunction, with Andrew Wood.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Malfunction and Red Cross up in Tacoma. But yeah, because like, Skin Yard, you know?
Yeah, of
like
course.
Jack and Dino's old band. Skin and the Mud Honey and the... It's all... They were all intertwined, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's like a long lineage of bands and ancestry, mm-hmm. kind of. How about Eddie Vedder, though? Eddie Vedder was kind of an outsider of the Seattle scene, am I correct?
Yeah, he was like from Southern California or something.
Yeah, he was...
But see, when Andrew died, right?
Yeah.
That's basically, Pearl Jam was Mud Love Bone. Then Andrew died and they got Eddie better, basically, except a different drummer also. You know, shit like that, you know, they just, bands grow out of other bands. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I'm glad Nirvana didn't try to do that with, I mean, they could have with another singer, but it just wouldn't have held the, you know, the same legendary
right.
status. You know.
Yeah, there's no way you could replace Kurt, you know.
There's no way in the world, yeah.
Yeah.
How about, like, what's next for the Screaming Sons of? Are you going to go in and do a full album at the same studio?
Yeah.
Or?
We're going down to Reno in April. We're doing a little tour. So we're going to tour down there. Because my guitar player and singer in my band, Screaming Sons of, is also the bass player for a well-known band around here called Gebular.
Yeah, I read about that. That's cool.
Yeah, and so it's like we're going to do a tour with them, and he's just going to do perform double duties. We already got the show booked in Reno, but we're going to book more shows on the way down instead of just going all the way down there and playing one show, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, work your way down slowly, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I actually did an interview with Steve Albini early this year, and would you guys ever think, I thought your sound would be really neat with having him record it. Would that ever be an idea?
Oh, yeah. Cause, I don't know. I've never worked with him, but... Cause that'd be a dream to have him do our song, you know what I'm saying?
Like, the way he captures drums, like the Jesus Lizard albums and stuff like that,
right.
I could just hear you just sounding like a monster with Steve Albini recording.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And plus, he's not that expensive, actually. People don't realize that.
They don't realize that he charges like a flat fee. They don't get like points and percentages off albums. They get a flat fee.
Yeah, he's not taking any points. He's punk rock, pretty much.
Yeah. But it's something you got to go back to, like, the internet kind of just, it's a bittersweet thing. It's like, because there's no really labels anymore. Everybody just starts their own band and they start their own label.
Sure.
I don't know, you know, it just doesn't seem like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that labels were out looking for bands. Now they don't have to, you know, it's like everything's just so.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like, how it's got to have changed a ton as far as even when, like, early 90s to now, about how. The labels matter at all, you know?
Labels don't matter. It's like everybody's in a band now. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, well, was everybody in a band 20 years ago also, or is it just that the internet and Facebook has got everybody so connected now? It just seems like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, maybe it just
seems like
there's more bands now because now you have to hear about them all.
Uh-huh, exactly. Now, I can't figure out if it was like this you know, or maybe it was Kurt who decided, well, everybody just wanted to fucking, everybody can be in a band because everybody's not as good as a guitar player as Hank, right?
Yeah, like, that's true. Know, like Kurt, maybe
Kurt wasn't that good of a guitar player. He's kind of musically retarded, but he was that, you know, he had the passion and stuff, you know, and
yeah,
but I don't know.
Yeah, do you think we're better off at this year, or do you think compared to 1987, are we better off, or are we worse off?
Oh, no, we're fucked, dude. We're fucked. We're fucked all around. No, I'm just kidding. But, no, I just, you know, I'm almost 50 now myself, you know.
Sure.
And I went to a book signing on just Tuesday Mark Yarm.
Okay.
Mark Yarm wrote that book, The Oral History of Grunge.
Yeah.
Well, I went to his book signing thing, and you know, it's all about everybody's about, you know. I just hate people that, you know, they write about shit and they don't know about it, you know. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Wait, did you not like that book or?
I haven't read it.
Yeah,
so.
But
but he called me to want to interview me. And I thought he was just some kind of goof freak because his name is Mark Yarm, which is so close to Mark Arm. So I just kind of, this was months ago, and he Facebooked me and wanted to interview me. And I was like, well, I don't know, because since I've been Facebook, you know, everyone wants to interview me, and I don't do that many interviews, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I check you out and shit too, right? And you're like authentic, right? So, but anyway, so I'm like,
yeah.
So I kind of shrugged it off. And it turns out his book was huge or something, you know? So. So I met him and stuff, and you know, but he never interviewed me.
Yeah, I had a friend read it and said it wasn't all that it was stacked up to be. So I don't think you made a bad decision, you know.
and then there's the authors that write shit about me, like this one dude, Jeff Burlingame's his name. He wrote a book, and I checked it out. It just pissed me off. I was like, I'm on like 7 pages, and he got the story wrong. I don't know. They write about me and shit, but get the story straight, you know.
Yeah, at least ask you, you know.
Yeah, this kind of pissed me off because the guy didn't even talk to me, and I'm on 7 pages of his book, and he's writing a story that got all the fucking thing wrong, and so, yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's tough, man. What are you going to do, sue him? You don't really want to put all your effort into doing that. You can just, you know, smack talk a little bit, you know.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, just go on Facebook, say, don't read this book, and people will probably, you know, like, you could, you know, cause a little havoc that way or something.
Right, yeah.
That's awesome, though, and I really do appreciate you, you know, checking me out, making sure I'm authentic, and I appreciate you even taking the time out of your day to do this interview. So.
Right on, yeah, and I don't do that many interviews. I mean, really, there's not that many people really out there. They are, but they're... You know, they're not, you know, they're not, like I said, authentic, you know, and got the background. And,
they've heard Smells Like Teen Spirit, and that's about it. And,
But, see, we went through 5 names before Nirvana. We were Skid Row, and then we was Tenkepchu, and we were Ted Etthread, and then we were Bliss, and then our 5th name was Nirvana. A lot of people don't know that, you know.
Yeah, not many people do know that. Yeah, and how about the coming up with the name Nirvana? Was that Kurt, or was that you guys just brainstorming?
It was all Kurt.
Really?
All Kurt. Yeah, everything was. You know, Kurt was. And he just, you know, I don't look at him as a big famous rock star. I look at him, you know, as my friend. You know, he used to kick it with and hang out at his house, and he was always had that bohemian kind of eccentric. Type, because we practice, like, for instance, when we learned Floyd the Barber, we played that song all for hours, all day long, just that one song.
Really?
You know, till we got it right, yeah. So that was Kurt. When he was focused on something, boom, that was it, you know.
Yeah, you can't get in his way when he's focused. That's awesome.
Right. And sometimes he'd go, here, Aaron, give me the drumsticks, and I'd get up, and he'd sit down and kind of show me, this is how I want the drums to do. You know, this is how I want. And I'd go, right on, cool, you know?
Sure, yeah. As long as you can show me clearly what you want, I could do that for you, right?
You bet.
That's really cool. Well, I guess that should be about it with the interview. So the band is Screaming Sons Of. Do you guys have a website?
Yeah, we got to go to Facebook on the Reverb Nation page.
Okay.
And you can listen to the 4 songs that we did at Robert Lang Studios.
Cool.
And, when is this going to when is this? Is this live right now, or is it going to be a rebroadcast?
No, this is going to be posted after Thanksgiving. Actually, I've got an episode already in the can, and I promised I would post that first. But it'll be the first week of December.
Right on.
So, cool. Yeah. So that's reverbnation.com/screamingsonsof, and yeah, I got to just thank you from the bottom of my heart. I mean, I've loved the whole Seattle story ever since I was a little guy. So this means
right
a ton,
on, Andy.
Man.
Right on.
So, yeah, cool. On behalf of any last words, Aaron?
Don't take any wooden nickels. That's all I got to say.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of Aaron Burkhard, this is Andy Dare signing off for the Andy Dare Show.
You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Dare. That's AndyDerer. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheAndyDarerShow. You can check out the videos at youtube.com/AndrewMartinDarer. And it all leads back to TheAndyDarerShow.com. Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Andy Dare Show.